live with Georgi Dinkov. How are you, sir? What's going on?
Not much. Still here, still afloat.
And now we're streaming on Rumble, so we could say whatever we want, Georgi. You're totally, excellent. It's Georgi Uncensored.
Georgi Uncensored. I heard the YouTube channel got banned. Is that true?
Mine?
Yeah, or no.
Oh, no. So if I got another, so say we did this live stream and we talked about vaccines and we talked about XYZ, you know, YouTube could possibly do another strike. Then I couldn't post on the channel. And then it could possibly get deleted if I got one more strike.
Oh, and I see. So strike one at this point.
Yeah. So, but the alternative is like watching what we say. Like, I mean, that's basically impossible. Like that would be a different show.
I'm not going to self-censor. Yeah. I'm not going to do Mr. Schwab, anal Schwab, another favor. Like, he hasn't done anything for me yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I wish we were on YouTube. I wish we could just, there would be more people. But anyways, we'll start streaming these on Rumble for anybody who wants to watch a stream. And then we'll upload them to Substack and Telegram and everything after. But I mean, you and I both have a commonality that we can't really restrain our speech. I think it's going to be pretty difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say anything obscene, but like, as far as the vaccines are going, I don't know if you've seen Twitter lately. They have like the tags, like the died suddenly and like vax deaths and like collapse suddenly. So they're all over the place. And I've been kind of watching like the tweets that have the largest engagement and then the responses to them. And lately the responses, like, first of all, they're very few. And they're really lame. Used to be like people were like, will get really vicious and be like, oh, you're killing people. You have to stop with this crap, blah, blah, blah. But now the responses are like, if any, are really muted. They're saying, well, it's not certain yet. Let's see what the evidence shows. And why isn't Musk releasing his files on Fauci? If he's got so much dirt on him. So yeah, let's see what happens. But I kind of have a good feeling that this may have broken the camel's back. Which unfortunately means, as we exchanged emails, that war may be the only remaining option that they have, the only trick they have up their sleeve.
So again, I think this is our normal dynamic, but I feel like all they'd have to do is scare the public sufficiently again, and they'd get people to take another vaccine. Like,
I don't think so, man. I think people are done, basically. Like, it's like the level of trust and now actually mistrust, active mistrust in the health authorities is so high. The level of mistrust, the level of trust of the normies is low and getting lower by the minute. And the level of mistrust in the people who actually have always kept their guard up is at such a high level that I just don't know. I mean, they have to go full fascism in order to implement that. Well, I don't think it will fly voluntarily. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. There was a quote by somebody I follow, and he's like, as their propaganda fails, they'll have to increase the use of brute force.
Yeah. There's nothing else. Just nothing else. Or, that's the other thing. Start shit somewhere else, Start a war with China. That will do it, right? Get involved directly with Russia. That would do it. And I know, behind the scenes, there's always like these back channel discussions that are going on between the major powers when they're fighting, right? I mean, there's a special room, apparently, like actually multiple rooms where basically both people from Russia and like USA and China and all the nuclear powers, they kind of sit and they're trying to de-escalate the situation if they feel it's getting into the, nuclear kind of exchange deal. So, I mean, they could probably negotiate something, with China or Russia and say like, hey, let's get into a small regional war. we can push everything that all of our political agendas at home, you can probably too, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happens because clearly, I don't think nuclear war is in the interest of anybody. I mean, it means the end of everybody, including the elite, because even if they inherit the earth, they're not going to be able to survive in this radioactive waste. And now that their transhumanism agenda has been exposed, this complete scam, as I mentioned several years ago on the forum. Who is the guy who died like one of the biggest elite members recently died at the ripe age of 94? Was it like the Rothschild? It was like a Rothschild.
One of the Rothschilds died last year. He was like the
He was in his 90s. That's the one. So clearly, whatever it is that they're telling us may turn out to be just that PR, so that we agree to all these draconian regulations they have for us. But I don't think anything, it's only the stick, it's never the carrot. There's no carrot. They're all lying about the carrot.
that our article we both read on UNS was basically saying that the West was not willing to talk to Russia in any capacity, and they were just like headed basically towards nuclear war or something terrible happened.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely seeing it going there, but like behind the scenes, I know that there's been communication going back and forth where basically like a smaller regional conflict could actually benefit, you know, pretty much everybody that's in this mess. Russians basically like, you know, they can get involved and like, you know, pretend to kick the West's butt. And that's what a lot of like Putin is actually kind of like a very moderate guy compared to some of the hardcore pro-militants that are in his government. And they want him out, replaced by somebody who is much more militant, much more willing to escalate things. So, you know, like if they can agree on a you know, smaller kind of war, you know, it can resolve a lot of issues. It can kill a lot of the plebs that are being owed a lot of money by the government, right? Retirement and whatnot. And well, they'll be young people, but again, it's like just like the less plebs out there, the less resource you have to, you know, expend on them. Same thing for China. They have a massive retiree population of about 300 to 400 million. They don't know what to do with it. I mean, these people are not going to fight the war, but they do have a surplus of about 50 to, I think, 70 million unpaired young males. And because of the one-child policy that used to be there, and because many people aborted the girls, now there's like a very heavy imbalance in favor of the young males. And there's, I mean, I don't know if we discussed it, but there's like an entire field of sociology which kind of claims that wars break out when basically there's a sufficient number of young males that think that their financial and sexual prospects are not looking very good. They're willing to wage wars, you know, and you know, kill and get killed for that. So yeah, China definitely has that problem. I don't think Russia has any problem like that. I think Russia, of everybody in the world, I think Russia is Russia is the country that benefits the least from any kind of a war. China benefits, obviously the West benefits. The West is bankrupt, right? They can use the war to implement their Great Reset and, you know, shift everybody to CBDC without any questioning or opportunity to resist. But Russia has got its resources, population is doing fine, right? The only thing is they don't want this Ukraine kind of weasel at their southwestern border, and they can handle that. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But economically, I just don't see things. What can happen in the West that can change things in a good direction economically? Nothing's there. I mean, I walk the streets of D.C. every day, and, you know, it's getting worse by the month. There are now tens of homeless people, and I don't know why they're coming here. Like, these are not local DC people. They're streaming from all over the country coming in here.
I think one of my dogs got out of the cage.
Is he barking?
No, that's the alarm for the cameras. We might do a little bit of a, like, I might have to go to
commercial break. If you want to put it on pause, then come back. Oh my
God. You hear that alarm right now?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Everybody, we'll be back in like 5 minutes. So let's just do this.
I didn't know we have a dog. I only had chickens.
I got two dogs. Wow. And we're back, and dogs all good. Georgie, we're back. Okay, so that UNS article also said that they thought a huge offensive was going to take place because Ukraine is being slaughtered, and they thought that the U.S. had to get itself into the war. And at the same time, so again, I'm speculating here, but at the same time, we've been seeing so much news about attacks on the grid, like over and over. And they're clearly trying to incept that idea into everybody's mind that the grid is extremely vulnerable, could go down. And then I want to talk about food shortages as well. But I mean, what's your take on that? Did you see
the articles on Zero Hedge saying that basically now that they're starting to pump the news that they keep finding classified documents in Biden's home? the theory behind it is that they're trying to basically like sort of like extort Biden, or at least the circle around him, into actually escalating and getting directly involved in the
secret files escalate us into a war?
Yeah. Basically, well, I mean, because they're saying like, listen, it's either that or we're going to impeach your ass for like having all these documents there. And that way we're actually going to show the public that, hey, look, the system works. You guys thought we were after Trump? No, we're just as willing to destroy Biden if he refuses to do what we say.
Yeah, I was when I saw the news about that, I was curious as to what was going on. So you think they'll throw him under the bus and what would happen after that?
Well, apparently these documents were found back in November before the midterm elections. Nobody said a word. Mm-hmm. And now why are they coming out now? I mean, this isn't something that was found now. This is basically like 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. So why are they coming out now? I mean, the only explanation is that there's zero hedge explanation is that there's an angle to it, especially the fact that they keep finding more and more. And in other words, the situation starts looking worse and worse for Biden. And they'll either 25th Amendment his butt and, introduce the camel, make her president. She's even more hapless than he is. She'll probably follow any order that no matter who gives it. That was the take. I don't know if that is the reason. I do think it's kind of strange that they're starting to make Biden look even worse than Trump, because the documents that Biden got, he got them while he was vice president. And as a vice president, he couldn't declassify them, while Trump could at least in theory, make the claim, and he made it, right? He said, I declassified these documents as a president and I have the right to take them with me. Yeah, I didn't give them to the archives when they asked me, but there's nothing illegal about it. It's just a misunderstanding, right? So here are the documents now, go away. And I think that's one of the reasons why he hasn't actually been indicted yet. It's just that the president, a sitting president has a lot of authority, especially when it comes to classified documents in his or her possession. So if Trump is saying I declassified them, which apparently is true, he did issue an executive order, he just wasn't released to the public. It probably makes this case non-prosecutable. So they were just, whatever they were trying to do to Trump, I think it was just sort of like a message that they're sending that they're in control. It's not Trump, and he should not run for president because they will probably be able to find, I don't know, dirtier underwear. He has pictures of him with him and Epstein on the plane, on the island. I don't know if they have pictures on the island, but he was a regular party buddy of Epstein. And they have pictures of him hugging these young girls that later turn out to be abused by Epstein. So, I mean, I'm sure that they can pull more dirt out on Trump. But now with the Biden situation, things are already looking much, much worse. These are top secret documents kept in his garage that basically wasn't even, didn't even have any kind of serious protection after Biden left office. Biden did, right? Because I think the president, the vice president get a, secret service protection for life. But not the garage with the Corvette where he kept most of these classified documents. And now apparently they found more in his living room than they found more in another location that was completely insecure as well. So the fact that the media, which as we all know is entirely owned by the deep state, and it was very heavily pro Biden just a week ago, now he's pumping up this story, tells me that this story, is something that the deep state is trying to use somehow. Because what do they say? You never give your enemy free publicity. Well, if this thing is being pumped up, this means that the deep state is turning on Biden, or at least he's going to use him as a scapegoat, right? Throw him under the bus, say, oh, look, this guy, you kept telling us that he's demented. Well, we agree. let's remove him and put somebody else in charge.
Before I play this inflation video, what would your read on 2023 be? Like, what was it the year of? I mean, besides Ray passing, but like...
Deflation. I think deflation is already here.
Yeah.
We basically have the worst of all worlds. Every economist dreads deflation because they don't even in the books, even academically, they don't have a solution for it. But I think the real reason behind deflation, if you look at it historically, is when the population gives up. Basically, the population says, I will no longer participate in a system as corrupt or as vile or as evil or as oppressive and whatnot. And I think that's what ultimately brought the Soviet Union down. Basically, the population kind of checked out. I think there was a deflationary cycle after the Vietnam War, right? Started during it and then continued for a little bit after. Basically, the population kind of gives up on its government and says, the heck with it. I'm just going to do the minimum that is required of me to get by, right? To feed my family, to feed myself, and that's it. But you can't run an economy on that. I mean, because all of this money has been printed out in a capitalist system, especially with interest. Now, if suddenly you drop production, right? That's your, the deflation, stagflation. I'm sorry, that's the deflation part of it. But then you also have the inflation because all the money has been printed around, right? But there's no production to essentially accommodate all this cash flowing around. And then now you have higher prices. So you have higher prices and nobody wants to produce anything. Nobody wants to do anything. And I'm seeing it every day with Idea Labs, like FedEx, UPS, USPS, completely destroyed. I cannot recognize these companies. And the fact that they're acting like as they are tells me that they know that people have no alternative. All the private companies, including DHL, so DHL, FedEx, UPS, the three biggest private couriers in the world, have completely reneged on any promises on any of their express shipping things. So let's say FedEx has a service second day. It's not second day. It's just the name remains second day, but now they're saying they don't guarantee anything. Nothing. Not even a week. They're saying best effort. And if you don't like it, go fish. UPS is the same thing. Next day is actually the worst, basically. I've had, maybe send 10 packages with next day air a month. Out of the 10, maybe two will arrive next day. The other eight, maybe second day, maybe third day, and there's nothing you can do. It does say right there on the page of both UPS and FedEx and DHL, it says, while the name of the service remains as we used to advertise it before, there's nothing that stands behind those words. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Let's just play this video because this is sobering. New York City grocery store. 1999 for what was that? Turkey? $8.59 for Reese's. $9.99
the eggs. The eggs is probably the most shocking. Yeah.
$7 for Oreos. $14.99 for sweet. This is horrifying.
Did you see the BlackRock report that came out yesterday?
Maybe I saw some mention of BlackRock, but I didn't see it.
Just open the browser and type in Google BlackRock. We are all screwed 2023. Just basically what I just told you right now. I mean, it's like, I didn't need BlackRock to tell me, but now basically they have an official report, which basically says that, that's a very, what should I call it? A very massaged title. The BlackRock report was actually titled, "We Are Screwed." can you go to one of the other links basically where they will not massage the report?
What do you remember where you read it? It was like official BlackRock site?
Yeah, just go. Did you type BlackRock with all screwed?
Yeah, up here.
And then after that, after you get the results, click on news. Let's see, maybe one of the, because this was on NPR. It was like on all of the,
the
radio stations. So it wasn't something that's basically that I came up. That's how I think that the report was actually titled. Or at least when they asked Larry Summers, that's how he introduced the report.
Well, I have seen this. BlackRock warns of a recession unlike any other.
No, it's not this one. 2023
says we are all doomed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, did you find it?
I don't know what website this is, but that's what it says.
That was actually pretty much, I think, what Larry Summers said when they asked him.
We're all
there. Doomed. We go. It's being optimistic. Yeah. Look. It's, I don't want to be Dr. Gloom, but Nouriel Roubini, he's saying the exact same thing, right? He's been saying it for a while. He's known as Dr. Doom, but now BlackRock's official guide to its own investors, which were very high net worth individuals, if you can even believe that term, because all their money is in fiat currency that's worth nothing. They're kind of saying that we're heading for a very not only stagflationary world. Over the next maybe decades, but also highly volatile as well. Nothing will be predictable. Everything will be fragmented. And in an environment like this, basically stagflation is a given, but so are basically, periods of social unrest and potentially regional wars. I think they even said that basically they wouldn't be surprised if there's a war with China or a bigger war with Russia, direct one where it's not actually a proxy.
I got my money on the cyber attack. I feel like that's I know I said that a year ago.
Another unseen enemy, right? Yeah. It can be, they don't have to present any proof that it actually happened, right? Yeah. They can just claim it happened, right? Of course, they have to bring the grid down themselves, yeah. or do something with the banking system. My favorite is like, hackers got into this bank and they stole all the money from our, like, there's nothing there to steal. Yeah. You just don't get it. It's a number. They can't actually steal your money from the bank. This is absurd. And 9 out of 10 people that I talk to on like that actually have economics degrees, they believe that somebody can get into their bank account and can siphon their money out of the account.
It seems like it would accomplish everything so quickly. Like they could change currency, they could ration, they could do under a wartime, they could do everything that they wanted to do even better than a virus type of thing.
Yeah. And that's why I think this is where it's going. I hope, and I don't think it's going to get to a nuclear war, but I'm not placing any bets on it, because if the situation gets truly out of control, did you hear the other one? Like, there's a news, I think it was today, the World Economic Forum is warning that because of the cost of living increase, they're worried that there's going to be a large scale civil unrest everywhere around the world. And now they're starting to worry about us. They're going to try to figure out how to make the pain less, like a smaller in terms of like the price that we're paying for groceries. Type in Google, WEF, worried about the cost of living increase.
I did see that they had like 5,000 were on the brink of polycrisis.
Probably.
Oh, that's a WEF. Yeah, man. People, so again, I don't know anything. I'm dumb, but like people have speculated 2024 or 2025 would be the big years. But I don't know. Like when I asked you, like what was the story of 2023? It seemed like just like putting out narratives like that were going to come to fruition in later years. Like because
there you go. It's from Bloomberg. Cost of living increase is top immediate risk for Davos elite.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
Yeah. So, and now they're basically saying, oh my God, yeah, polycrisis. Yeah, you found that other link, but like many of them are massaged. But if you look at those are the actual words, you know, basically they're elite and now starting to worry that they may actually be repercussions for what they did over the last 2 years. Actually, a lot longer than last 2 years, but last 2 years were really egregious.
Now
they're debating on what to do to solve it. And of course, nobody has any solutions because there are no solutions. The solution is we get rid of WEF and whatever they've siphoned into their bank accounts goes back to the regular people. Of course, that's not going to happen without, you know, bodies swinging from lampposts. But let's see. Maybe we'll get our wish in 2023.
Yeah, we'll have to stay tuned and see what happens. Okay. I do have to bring my... probably get the dogs to go to the bathroom at some point. this is a new element of this show is worrying about these puppy dogs. Okay.
Your livestock that's on the property.
Okay, let's talk about one of these articles. Let's get into, or which one did you really have an affinity for?
Let's see. Kind of like the self-preferential accumulate pregnenolone, progesterone, DHEA.
Yeah, that was good.
I think that's it's a kind of like not only a confirmation of what Ray's been saying for a long time, but also kind of shows you the record that cells have a preference for those steroids, probably for a very good reason. And these steroids passively diffuse. So even though there is active transport, in other words, through various enzymes and channels, the passive process is not rate limited. And the cells, when given the chance, basically accumulate pregnenolone above all in a concentration reaching intracellular concentrations more than 100 times higher than what's in the blood. So yeah, another confirmation of Ray's statements that when you do blood tests for steroids, you're not really getting like anywhere close to the picture of what's going on inside the cell. Because if you look at they accumulated all of the steroids at higher concentrations of the ones that are measured, higher concentration inside of the cell compared to outside of the cell. But that also included estrogen. So estrogen, I think, reached concentrations 10 to 20 times higher. If you actually open, it's a free article. They have some nice graphs in there with the different steroids. So you cannot really do any blood tests unless you do them repeatedly and try to estimate what's inside the cell. The other thing is that even though, since the cells accumulate these steroids and retain them, you can actually have very low levels outside and outside of the cell and still very high levels inside. So it looks like blood testing is basically blood steroid testing is not really useful for much, except to tell you, how much your endocrine glands from which these steroids are originating, how well they're working. So if you're testing a menopausal woman and she has low progesterone and estradiol, that means the ovaries are not working. But that's about it. It means absolutely nothing. And this study shows it very well. You know, I think over 20 different cell types that they tried from the very different tumors, right? And they all had the same preference and accumulated these steroids at a much higher level than they are in the circulation. So another method needs to be invented to test for steroids, or we need to basically start testing for their effects. And there will be like a surrogate measure of basically how many, how much of a steroid you have. We kind of have the prolactin for estrogen and for serotonin, right? But I don't know of many sort of like reliable surrogate biomarkers of high androgen levels or high. Oh, actually, for cortisol, we do. But it's basically they're indirect and many and they're non-specific. So, for example, elevation of your liver enzymes more often than not is actually due to cortisol. And cortisol is because we know that cortisol shreds many different tissues, but it also damages the liver. Remember that study on vitamin D being able to like reverse some of these effects of cortisol. So yeah, but we, you know, we need to start looking for things that can, you know, be more specific for each of these steroids and kind of tell us, you know, what the situation is inside of the cell. For something like, some people say, well, what about electrolytes? Some of those can be helpful. Like for example, very high levels of potassium in the blood usually means adrenal insufficiency. It could be a test for, you know, Addison disease. But the like low or high levels of sodium in the blood don't necessarily mean much because when your aldosterone levels rise to retain sodium, that actually that sodium accumulates inside of the cell. So it can also be high outside of the cell, extracellular, but it's not guaranteed. So long story short, the blood testing for steroids is largely unreliable and we need to come up with better measures. The good news is that the pregnenolone, progesterone, DHA are the youth health promoting steroids, which is corroborated by the fact that the cells, you know, cannot really get enough of them. No matter what the concentration they try to up to 100 times higher than the medium, then the cell kept gobbling them up. So it looks like there is no limit. I mean, the cell will accumulate as much pregnenolone as you give it. Now, of course, with progesterone, with DHA and testosterone and the other steroids, you cannot really liberally throw them at the cell like pregnenolone because those do have side effects, while pregnenolone did not. And I've seen different studies, including the ones that we are Ideal Labs has done ourselves, that no matter how high the concentration of pregnenolone inside of the cell, it's not cytotoxic, no matter how much pregnenolone you throw at the cell. That's not true with DHEA. It's not true with testosterone. It's not true with dihydrotestosterone. Of course, it's definitely not true with cortisol and estrogen. It's somewhat true in progesterone. Progesterone, if you achieve intracellular concentrations of about 75 micromoles per liter, you start seeing a little bit of a leakage of lactate dehydrogenase, which is an intracellular enzyme. And once that starts leaking outside of the cell, it's one of the tests for cytotoxicity. Not so with pregnenolone. No matter how much we try to get into the cell, basically there was no toxicity.
That confirms something Ray said like 10 years ago. He said the cell wants as much pregnenolone basically as it can possibly get.
Yeah.
What do you think about, so again, don't get me wrong, testing is very important, but what about just using the body temperature and the pulse rate? Like if the temperature is chronically low, you can just put your money on like all of
there's definitely no progesterone and no thyroid.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like,
they're lower than optimal. Yeah. There's no other way for you to have low core temperature. If either T3 or progesterone or both are not lower than optimal.
And Ray had talked about, I'm saying Ray said this, Ray said that, but he was talking with somebody and I think they were asking about like ejaculate volume or something. And he said it's very closely associated with the level of androgens. And so there are like those little things. Speaking of ejaculate volume, we'll talk about that finasteride article.
one of the common signs of taking finasteride is drastically decreased
100%
ejaculate volume.
Yeah. I'm saying if a person really kind of observes themselves like a bit of nature or something, you can figure out a lot without even having to rely on lab tests. So,
sure. Yeah, I mean, again, the only reason I mention this is that, you know, some people actually do the tests and they're very common, especially for, like, you know, menopause or andropause. I mean, doctors will routinely test for these. But the only thing they can tell is, like, if you have a low testosterone in the blood, chances are you basically, of course, you're hypogonadal, but that doesn't mean much about your intracellular levels of androgens, you know, because you're producing also DHEA that intracellularly can get converted to the testosterone and the hydrotestosterone. So, yeah. So in terms of systemic health, you probably don't need any of these tests. I mean, if you're always low on energy, if your mood is sour all the time or most of the time, if you have trouble sleeping, if you have poor libido, but then, of course, having a very high libido, in other words, being sexually active without actually being presented with a stimulus, that's also not a good sign. That's usually a sign of very high estrogen.
Yeah, I know we've talked about this a lot, but what do you think about like a good libido being or a high level of androgens being like in control of your libido? Like it doesn't.
And being having an extremely robust, it's almost like the cortisol response in young healthy people. When they get presented with a stressful situation, they actually have a very high spike of cortisol, mm-hmm. but also rapidly declining afterwards, mm-hmm. because it triggers the negative feedback mechanism through basically when the cortisol rises, it will suppress ACTH, and then that will actually turn off that response. Now, in older people or chronically stressed people, they actually have a higher baseline level of cortisol even without being stressed. And when they get stressed, they get a little bit of an increase, but not actually to the point where they can actually turn off that whole vicious cycle by lowering ACTH. There are some endocrinological circles are talking about ACTH resistance, right? The cortisol cannot really activate a receptor. And I think some doctors even try to basically treat very chronically stressed people in the face of a burnout. They'll actually give them an injection of a cortisol or give them a high dosage of oral cortisol, hoping that this will suppress ACTH and then basically bring the system under control, because those doctors have started to recognize the pituitary hormones such as ACTH, LH, FSH, TSH, they're all pro-inflammatory hormones, and they're largely responsible for a lot of these negative effects that are seen in people under chronic stress. It's not the cortisol itself has some very bad effects long term, but really the ones that kind of do you in that really can cause cancers and various neurodegenerative diseases are the pituitary hormones. So those need to be brought down. Recently, this was recognized for a hormone released by the hypothalamus called CRH or CRF, corticotropin releasing factor or hormone. It's now actually acknowledged as a causative factor in multiple sclerosis, Huntington disease, and Parkinson's disease. And basically, it's something that sits at the top of the adrenal cascade, right? CRH causes the pituitary to release ACTH, and ACTH does the cortisol. And in cortisol, basically, if there is a robust response, can lower both ACTH and CRH, right? So the pituitary and the hypothalamic hormones tend to be not very beneficial, and they're best kept in check. You want sensitivity. A sexually well-functioning adult would be, if you're presenting with an object of your affection, you get a very robust and intense response, regardless of how you want to define it. And then when this object of your affection is no longer around, then you shouldn't be walking around, if you're male, erect 100% of the time. That's not a good sign. It's not. I know a lot of bodybuilders shoot for that, because I think it pumps up their ego, right? They walk around and, especially if they have a higher than average middle leg, they probably are getting all the looks from the females, so they makes them feel very appreciated. But that's not a sign of good health. You can cause damage. You can get a priapism, and that's a really bad situation. You end up in the ER and with a I think they inject you with an adrenaline directly into the penis. Not a pleasant situation.
one last. Oh, so I think Hans Selye, I might be wrong on this. I think he discovered CRH, or I think it was called something else, because there was some paper about it, and they were like, thanks to Hans Selye, we figured out CRH is the hypothalamic hormone that activates pituitary to release ACTH. And then also,
I think he was injecting rodents with extracts from brain, basically, because he knew, just like as the Russians were, Ray said, they were writing in their books, and the brain controls pretty much the entire body, right? Mm-hmm. Anything, you cannot have a disease without, involving the brain as well. You have to look at the brain as well. So he read that and he believed that, and he was doing a lot of research with brain extracts, whether they can cause or treat specific conditions. And he noticed that you can actually cause muscle and various different organ atrophy if you inject basically sufficiently large amounts of the brain extract of a hypothalamus. And then he thought there's a factor there that's causing this, because initially it caused the adrenals to enlarge, but if you keep injecting it, eventually the adrenals atrophied and basically failed, and the animals died. They died of adrenal insufficiency.
So speaking of horrific stress that will last a long time, what is this? Finasteride causes gut inflammation, high serotonin, low dopamine, allopregnanolone may treat. What do you think?
So this is probably one of the I don't know if you've seen, but there's been a class action lawsuit against the makers of Finasteride by a bunch of different people. It's a long time in the making. For about a decade, they were denying that that such a thing as PFS even exists. But now there's sufficient evidence that it does, and it's a multifactorial syndrome. Sexual dysfunction is just a very small part of it. So believe it or not, basically severe depression, psychosis, neurodegenerative disease, muscle atrophy, all of these things are part of the syndrome. And basically, I remember that somebody sent forward me an email from Ray back in 2015, and that person had taken finasteride. And basically he said, oh, Ray, you know, all of my hormones are back to normal, but, you know, something isn't right. I cannot tolerate any foods, and this happened to coincide with my finasteride use, even though it was a low dose. And Ray said, it probably damaged the liver and the intestine. So I would recommend, you know, checking regularly your temperature and basically like trying to go on like, very easily digestible diet for about a month, milk and orange juice and nothing else. And make sure you filter the orange juice so there's no pulp left. And then, you know, basically this should help you. But he's saying like the severity of the long-term damage depends on for how long you were taking the finasteride and how high of a dose. That was the first time that I heard the finasteride may actually have an effect on the gastrointestinal tract. But of course, you know, if something messes up with your digestion, then all hell breaks loose. But every doctor that I've talked to, and I think this is the first study that actually, regardless of the doctors, even PubMed didn't have anything published on the topic. And this is the first study that shows that basically finasteride, chronically increases the inflammation in the GI tract by elevating serotonin and simultaneously lowering dopamine. But of course, those go hand in hand. So basically the damage the finasteride does may very well be mostly starting the gut. Just like, who was it? Hippocrates who said this? All disease starts in the gut?
Yeah, like all evil starts in...
Evil starts in the gut. Well, far as finasteride is concerned, I think a lot of people have been trying to look at like the gonads or even the brain and saying like maybe that's it causes some permanent damage there where it looks like the damage is actually in the intestine because it's increasing these inflammatory mediators, the interleukins and the tumor necrosis factor. Mm-hmm. But what was particularly striking to me is that was also increasing serotonin and lowering dopamine. And then I immediately made a connection with the FDA recently approving allopregnanolone as an antidepressant for postpartum depression, rapidly acting too. So that in an effect is an admission that allopregnanolone, treats depression by lowering serotonin or at least opposing it and or raising dopamine. In other words, another tacit admission, indirect, that serotonin causes depression. And now that we know the finasteride causes inflammation and higher serotonin, we know the finasteride causes depression, severe, often suicidal, actually. Basically, now we have a kind of like a solid evidence that, that's really like, the mediator through which finasteride causes these things is the higher serotonin and the lower dopamine. In this case, they managed to reverse most of the pathology by administering allopregnanolone. And as I comment in the blog, is like I said, okay, well, that's good because that's one of the 5-alpha reductase metabolites, right? Through progesterone. But what about the other one? I mean, the very target of finasteride is not allopregnanolone, it's dihydrotestosterone. And multiple studies have now demonstrated that basically you can have you will have very poor digestion if your level of androgen production daily is low. In fact, there are several experimental sort of, I don't want to call them case studies because they had more than one person, but they showed reversal of inflammatory bowel disease by injection of anabolic androgenic steroids.
I was just talking to somebody yesterday about that. Like the doctor was like disenchanted with using antibiotics for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And so he started using like anabolic steroids for it.
Yep.
He thought it was effective.
Yeah. And there's a study I can show you. It was with mice, but basically they reversed a lot of the pathology of Alzheimer's disease by giving the mice dihydrotestosterone. Mm-hmm. And their findings were that dihydrotestosterone completely changed the microbiome away from the pathogenic bacteria, which they claim, the medicine is still stuck at like the good versus the bad bacteria. And there is some truth to that, right? But still, I think if you look at that actual study, you'll see that, yeah, sure, the dihydrotestosterone did change the microbiome, but also drastically decreased the total count. So it kind of acted like an antibiotic. So I guess that's what finasteride does by suppressing, conversely, the levels of thyroid testosterone and allopurinol, which, by the way, are also synthesized in the gut. Then you get a very pro-cortisol, pro-estrogenic environment in the gastrointestinal tract because the allopregnanol and the DHT are the natural antagonists of these steroids. So you're going to get basically all kinds of, you know, inflammation going on, which the study confirmed, and of course, an overgrowth of bacteria. That probably is also like a responsible for a good portion of the negative effects that people with PFS experience. Every single one that I've talked to them says they have problem with digestion, but they didn't think it was the core of their symptoms. It was basically, they were all worried about, oh, they can get an erection, or like, oh, they're very depressed. But that actually seems to be starting from the gut, because if we assume that it's serotonin that's causing you, it's causing the depression, well, 90% of it is produced in the gut. So you that inflammatory environment in the gut needs to be ruled in somehow. And one way to do it in this study specifically is by using allopregnanolone. I think oral progesterone would work just as well, because 5-alpha reductase is expressed in the GI tract. You should be able to synthesize a sufficient amount of allopregnanolone by taking progesterone. Several studies with females confirm that by giving them, they call it microdosing, 50 milligrams of progesterone daily, but they call it microdosing because the absorption of progesterone is very low when it's not in a good solvent, such as vitamin E and long-chain fatty acids. So with something like, if you're using Progest E, I think 50 milligrams once or twice a day will be a very good dosage. They can probably replicate the effects of that study. And of course, you can find testosterone or dihydrotestosterone, and you can dissolve them in vitamin E by itself, or especially in combination with a progesterone, will probably be a very good treatment. I don't know if you remember my thread 5 or 6 years ago, the structural requirements for an optimal anti-catabolic steroid, where I clashed with our favorite Ukrainian or Russian. I think he's Russian.
Who?
The starts with G, second letter B. Anyways, over there, basically, I said that, you know, it looks like the body is optimizing for the for basically in optimal health, you have sufficient reserves of progesterone and possibly the hydrotestosterone, if not in the blood, at least in the tissues. So conversely, taking these should be able to improve health. And this study suggests that at least as far as the inflammation in the gastrointestinal tract is involved, that may be the case. And by the way, it doesn't have to be finasteride. I mean, this elevation of interleukins and tumor necrosis factor alpha and the erythrocyte sedimentation rate and the elevated serotonin, you can actually get it just by eating suboptimal foods. The resistant starch, anything that irritates the gut. Another study, which we should probably do a second after this, is that food dye, the food coloring that actually causes inflammatory bowel disease. It actually caused it by the exact same mechanism. It elevated the same biomarkers, inflammatory biomarkers that this study with finasteride saw elevated.
That like thin, younger guy losing hair, diarrhea, is such a common like phenotype that I come across. It's extremely common. So that's that was a great find. Where do you have some things set up to like give you notifications if papers come out like that? That, I mean, that's a wild paper.
The finasteride?
Yeah.
No, actually, I found it by chance. It was pure synchronicity. By chance, I spent about half my day digging through PubMed and like various different like scientific sort of like pipelines. So I just, you know, when I go there, I search for like several things that are of interest, and I forgot what was the case, but that day I was searching for dihydrotestosterone, and I was looking for new articles on dihydrotestosterone, and the one that came up was this one, finasteride. So I started reading it. It didn't say, it only mentioned finasteride, it mentioned DHT because it was a target for finasteride. And I said, huh, how interesting. You spend half the article talking about DHT, but then instead of administering DHT, you administer allopregnanolone. I guess they're afraid, because DHT has such a you know, evil reputation in the medical circles. I guess they didn't want to like say anything good or positive about it, or otherwise the study may not get published.
Why don't we talk about Idea Labs? I really can't go that long. The dogs are going to piss all over the game. So we're about an hour right now, and I know that included the intro music, which I think ran for like 10 minutes or so. But let's talk about Idea Labs. So what is going on right now? What's happening?
I don't know if you saw, we changed the in Energen, we changed the formulation. Instead of the regular thiamine, we have like a prosyl thiamine, which is a much more lipophilic. And people are saying they do feel the difference in effects. In fact, now they're saying I can take a full dose of Energen. I have to take like half of it because it's making me so like I don't know, not agitated, but they're almost like they're saying like, oh, I used to be on Adderall, and this thing kind of approximates it. I can only take like 10 drops because if I take the full 20, I'll be running circles around the house the whole day.
How do people take that? Because this was the first product I ever bought from you, maybe in like when did you start Idealize? Was it 2014?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I purchased your pregnenolone, your B vitamins. And then what was the third product? You got Estroban.
So Estroban was actually the first of all of them.
I think I purchased all those, but I just remember there were a lot of drops and it was real smelly. So people just take it orally.
Now it's even smellier. Oh, now it smells like garlic because prosyltiamine. And it turns out that the taste and smell of garlic is due mostly to the it containing allethiamine and prosyltiamine. And the allethiamine name is from Allium sepa, which is the Latin name for garlic.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I do and what most people have told me they do is like they take an empty gelatin capsule. They put the drops inside. They basically like clap it. They close it, and they take it as a normal like a capsule. And it seems to work really well.
The ethanol doesn't irritate the gut or anything.
No sulfury burps and whatnot. Like it seems to be working really well.
And it's in ethanol.
Yeah, ethanol and water.
Mm.
The ethanol is a very small part, maybe no more than 20%.
And that's just to make it more available.
But the fact is that prosyltiamine does not dissolve in water.
Mm.
Like if you want to have even 25 milligrams per milliliter, you have to have the ethanol. Otherwise, nothing will dissolve. It will just clump and sit at the bottom, and basically nothing will dissolve.
These are totally random questions. Have you thought about putting your Tocovit in olive oil? I feel like you'd have like a banger product if you did that.
I can do that. I mean, we can have it as an option, like in olive oil.
But the vitamin,
or I can switch completely towards olive oil if that's basically. See, the thing is, like, it ends up that I have to have the both options because as soon as I change
it into something,
I feel that I do believe that the majority, if I switch to entirely olive oil, 80% will love it, 20% will start sitting in my say like, oh my God, this was a lifesaver. How dare you change? So I have to keep both options, and I probably will because it's one of the products that basically like, it's so such a pillar of bioenergetics. It's so important for so many different things. It's probably worth having it is just like the quinoa. I have it in SFA and ethanol, and I have it in olive oil.
Oh, cool.
And I think the Tocovit, I'll start doing in olive oil as well because people have been asking for it.
Oh.
Not that many, but I think it's sufficiently sort of like there are enough people that are not using it simply because it's in MCT right now that if I do it in olive oil, they will basically, become customers, converts, because now they're using other products simply because this one is in MCT.
I'm giving my puppies and chickens the vitamin K too.
You are? Okay.
I might have to order some more for you.
Oh, have you noticed any change? Like, are your chickens old enough to lay eggs or no?
Not yet. They'll probably start laying in March, I think. It's a little while.
Do you notice anything, like any change in behavior or like appearance when you do the vitamin K? The plumage should start getting more shiny, like if this is affecting them well.
Well, I think they're like teens right now, so they actually look real scruffy. And I think they'll go through a molt and then they'll get their kind of mature feathers, but I've been feeding them guava right now and I've been feeding them sugar rather than starch to see if it makes any difference. And they like dip their whole head in this like guava shake that I make for them. And so they just look like they're all wet. They're wet 24/7. They look like vagrants. Like they're like real messed up looking.
So they like it that much that actually like dip their entire heads in there?
Yeah, yeah. Like they also shake their beak and it will just go. They're like completely pigs. They'll shake it and it will go all over everybody else. And like everybody will be wet, like drinking the guava shake. It's really funny.
They'll, right now is winter. Wait until the summer. They'll learn not to do that because all that sweet stuff that's going to attract a lot of like flies and bees and whatnot. Or maybe the chickens will love it. Like, oh my God, the food is coming to us. We don't need to go and eat. The insects are coming to us. We're just going to eat them, and not even move.
I thought I heard a puppy crying. I may have to stop again.
Okay, if you want. I mean, you might as well do it because otherwise, like, can they do any damage if you don't go and check up on them?
Though they could just piss all over the floor, which I'm really trying to avoid.
Okay.
Why
I can wait. I mean, I think you should go and check.
Well, I'd have to like take them outside and take them back inside.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay. So maybe we do like another article and then,
yeah, let's do another two articles and we'll call it a day. Okay. And then, okay. So idealabsdc.com, you hear it from the source. He's listened to the people changing the ingredients. Man, one last thing. I've talked to a lot of people this last year, and it does seem like MCT oil is extremely irritating, especially for people, again, like diarrhea and stuff. That stuff is it seems really irritating.
Well, look for it this week. We'll release stock of it in olive oil. It's really not that big of a change. I mean, we're already getting the extract. All we have to do, like, it's just adding the dilutant that will be olive. It will be organic olive oil the same way as it is with the quinoa.
And then I do coaching on patreon.com/Danny Roddy. And there is one spot that you can buy for 2,150 pesos. So I appreciate it. Okay, let's do two more articles here. And so we talked about this finasteride one. We talked about the cells love pregnenolone. And
you want to talk about the food color?
Yeah. Because
that's like that's ubiquitous. That's everywhere.
Got it.
It's called Allura Red, I think. Allura Red AC. I have a link, like maybe like 10 sentences down. Yeah, right there. And it's everywhere. I mean, it's apparently like it's in many food targeted, specifically targeted for children. And, you know, the study found that basically even very small amounts, it reliably triggers the equivalent of Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis in rodents. And the way he did that, of course, is by raising serotonin. So once again, we have a you know, very solid evidence here, and they don't really mix words. They kind of call it out directly, saying that, you know, high levels of serotonin in the gut is not a good thing. Now, I don't know how it can be a good thing anywhere else if it's not a good thing in the GI tract, but that's for the editors of the magazine or like the psychiatrist to decide. But they're basically saying like you should avoid this stuff because it actually can cause inflammatory bowel disease. And now, considering how ubiquitous this dye is, I mean, that is probably sufficient to explain most of the case we're seeing in children and the young adults. And we know they've been skyrocketing. So rates of inflammatory bowel disease and colorectal cancer are skyrocketing, and now they've exceeded those in older people, because this used to be old people's diseases. And I'm thinking, you know, this dye alone is probably sufficient to explain it. An article I posted maybe 2 or 3 years ago was about titanium dioxide, a very small amount. And titanium dioxide is, again, in many different foods, and it's virtually in every pharmaceutical that's available to you as a pill, as a tablet, not as a capsule, but as a tablet. And even a very small amount, actually smaller than what you will get from a single pill, was able to cause, again, inflammation in the GI tract, inflammation in the liver, and type 2 diabetes. So, you know, Ray, once again, seems to have struck gold. I mean, like the majority of these diseases that we're seeing around us, maybe nothing more than, you know, sort of like poisoning from, you know, by industrial wastes that are being presented to us as these benign food coloring ingredients. So anything that says artificial coloring on it, you should probably avoid.
Yeah, I think it's important to occasionally point out that like a lot of this stuff that we talk about would be so unnecessary if the food wasn't so toxic.
Yeah.
Like, man, I titanium dioxide in most aspirins. You know,
exactly. You're taking a pill that's commercially sold out there. It doesn't have to be a prescription drug. It's if it's in a tablet form, chances are it contains either talc and or titanium dioxide. It's usually silica. The latter. Mm-hmm. Actually, talc is more expensive, mm-hmm. so they don't put it in many pills. But titanium dioxide everywhere.
And silica, it's probably pretty cheap.
And silicon dioxide, but also tends to be more expensive. So mm-hmm. titanium dioxide everywhere.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to another one here. What else?
I can't.
What about PUFA metabolite? Prostaglandin promotes lipolysis, fibrosis, causes obesity.
Yeah, I think that one is basically kind of like if there was some doubts whether people should use aspirin on a daily basis, that mm-hmm. should probably remove any remaining doubt, because it shows that the prostaglandins are direct cause of basically, you know, first of all, it causes lipolysis. So if you're eating PUFA, by definition. I mean, maybe you can talk to our mutual friend of ours, the doctor, who said that, you know, basically if you're eating low carb, which means by definition a lot of fat floating around, right? If a decent amount of that fat is PUFA, it's going to trigger the prostaglandin production, and they're going to have you know, lipolysis, fibrosis, and inflammation, which is by definition anti-thyroid. So I think to me that settles it. If you ever have this argument with him again.
So- like prostaglandins are like hormones made from PUFA, right?
They're not hormones because,
I know that depends on the definition,
yeah, but like it's basically, it has a hormone-like effect, right? Yeah, yeah. So it's basically, it can trigger multiple endocrine systems and usually not in a good way. It synergizes with estrogen. So if you're producing a small amount of estrogen, but you have a sufficient amount of prostaglandins floating around, it will be the equivalent of having, of basically being, you know, poisoned by massive amounts of estrogen. It also destroys the negative feedback mechanism between cortisol and the adrenal axis, like the ACTH and the CRH. So there was, I don't know if you remember that old study that showed that eating PUFA basically increases cortisol even in the absence of ACTH. So you're going to have basically, you're going to trigger the stress system, right? And simultaneously, they're pro-inflammatory. So anytime you have the prostaglandins that are derived from arachidonic acid, basically, you're going to trigger a lot of other inflammatory mediators downstream. Again, the interleukins, the tumor necrosis factor alpha, nuclear factor kappa B, I think is another one that's called. And of course, the prostaglandins are known to activate tryptophan hydroxylase. So you're going to be synthesizing more serotonin. Serotonin also gets involved in these multiple feedback cycles. It promotes the synthesis of cortisol through the serotonin receptor 5-HT2C. It promotes, actually increases the activity, not only the activity of aromatase, but also the expression of aromatase. So we'll be able to produce more estrogen. Really nasty stuff. And basically the prostaglandins are probably one of the most dietarily ubiquitous, even though you don't digest them in such big amounts directly, even though they are. You know, basically if you get foods that are produced, that are being cooked with PUFA, a lot of these processes that are happening during cooking, or a lot of these enzymes that are being added, especially for the vegans and like the raw eaters, right? They like these, you know, foods that are fermented, and they have a lot of, you know, probiotics and prebiotics and whatnot. But guess what? A lot of these enzymes and bacteria and the yeast that is being added to a lot of these foods to make them more palatable, they actually contain the enzymes that are capable of taking the PUFA in the food and converting it to the prostaglandins. So if you're eating a lot of these raw / fermented foods out there, especially with the added enzymes and the yeasts, you're probably ingesting a good amount of preformed prostaglandins, you know, directly. But even without that, basically, if you're eating a sufficient amount of PUFA, basically you'll be producing the prostaglandins. And now the prostaglandins are known to be involved in virtually every cancer, especially the prostate cancer. One of the earliest evidences that aspirin has effects against cancer was against prostate cancer. But because the prostate cancer at the time and still is considered something that's not very aggressive, and for many people, even though now pharma is very greedy and they probably ask you to treat it, but back in the day and to this day, many doctors will say, well, you know, if it's not this, they give it a scale from 1 to 10. And if you're 7 or below in terms of aggressors, they'll say, well, let's just not do anything right now. But anyways, long story short, some of the earliest evidence of aspirin being beneficial for cancer came out of prostate cancer. And they know for a fact that it promotes the growth of prostate cancer, the prostaglandins. Later on, they found out that the prostaglandins promote breast cancer, especially the estrogen receptor positive one. And they weren't sure how, and then they found out that basically it synergized with estrogen. So you can have normal amounts of estrogen, well, if you consider normal in a postmenopausal woman, or even low ones, right? They're claiming that they're low. But if you have a sufficient amounts of these prostaglandins, that can trigger the cancerization of this cancer, which is still driven by estrogen. Conversely, if you give prostaglandin inhibitors, in many cases, you can actually fully arrest the growth of the estrogen receptive positive breast cancer without the need to administer estrogen antagonists such as tamoxifen, clomiphene, right? Or aromatase inhibitors, which are still beneficial, but as it turns out that it looks like it's the PUFA that's the trigger, right? The estrogen is, in this case, not so innocent bystander, but it's still more of a bystander than a cause, while the prostaglandins being the primary cause.
This is where so that anti-seed oil thing has become pretty popular on the internet. And I think it just kind of stops short of talking about the prostaglandins. And then also, like, it's so not controversial that PGE2 is high in prostate cancer, high in breast cancer, and then activates aromatase. And yep. So like it Ray's stuff is so coherent because you can't like fully understand how bad PUFA is until you understand the prostaglandins, and then you, it activates estrogen, which is also harmful. And so it just like all fits together in a nice little box. And so the anti-seed oil stuff on the internet just kind of doesn't get there. And it just, kinda...
I think the seed oil industry threw a lot of a lot of money and power towards propaganda to stop short of making the connection. Because if it was made, that connection was made in the public consciousness, then basically the industry is finished, because there's no doubt. Nobody's denying that the prostaglandin E2 or F2 are really bad, or D2. Mm-hmm. They're very bad for many different conditions, right? And then things like aspirin or like the different NSAIDs are actually beneficial because they inhibit the synthesis of those things. But in most people's minds, it's like eating PUFO does not directly correlate to having higher levels of prostaglandins. And I've seen multiple articles and doctors argue that basically, well, just because you eat more of the precursor, and they're kind of using our argument too, just because you're eating more of the precursor doesn't mean you're going to get, more of the really bad downstream metabolite. But in this case, it seems to be the case, because every time you have lipolysis, which happens under stress, or you're eating this high PUFA diet or low carb or whatnot, every time you're under stress or you have elevated lipolysis, PUFA gets preferentially released from the fatty stores. So if the PUFA gets preferentially released, it's got to go through the prostaglandin pathway. Some of it will get oxidized, but if a sufficient amount gets into the bloodstream, you're guaranteed to have a certain amount of prostaglandins. And even mainstream medicine admits that as far as PGE2 is concerned, the ideal amount of it in the blood is zero. Yeah. Which if the connection has been made in the public consciousness, the eating PUFA means non-zero amount of PGE in the blood, then the public will say, you know what? Not eating any more seed oils. And then, I don't know, then I think then the seed industry will say, okay, it's time to go to war in China, because the situation is becoming desperate.
Good stuff. Okay, let's run through one more article here, and then we'll call it a day. What else?
Let's see, I have it open here.
We got estrogen. Mm-hmm. Causes.
Oh, yeah, the estrogen DHT. I guess I'm beating a dead horse at this point, but the great article, because directly demonstrates two things. Number one, estrogen is actually the cause of the fibrosis in the prostate, and fibrosis is an obligate precursor condition to the prostate cancer. Unless you're getting somehow bombarded with massive amounts of radiation, or you're getting some kind of a chemical carcinogen into you, which, by the way, estrogen is. Not many people remember, but in 2001, National Institutes of Health declared estrogen as a known human carcinogen. Well, that aside, unless you're getting some kind of directly carcinogenic therapy going towards your prostate, the way to get prostate cancer is, first you're going to get a benign prostate hyperplasia, then you're going to get basically the fibrotic states, and over time, if nothing's changing and the inflammation continues unabated, then you're going to get prostate cancer. So this means that estrogen is now shown to basically, first it was shown to directly cause the fibrosis, and even this article, even though it didn't want to say it directly, because estrogen is actually used as treatment for prostate cancer, believe it or not. But now they're saying, I don't know about that, right? But then they went a step further and administered DHT and all of the fibrotic biomarkers and just the tissue sampling that they did basically disappeared. So they kind of stopped short of saying that DHT will treat instead of cause prostate cancer. But to me, the message is on the wall. So let's see who will be the first one to publish a study that shows that DHT is therapeutic in prostate cancer, and how long for how long after that person remains alive and in good health without jumping out of windows and things happening in the Caribbean as they're happening now with these crypto billionaires.
Yeah. Well, your paper was going to be one of those, right? And so what?
I'll do the study. I don't know if I'll actually want to publish it, because we're attracting a lot of attention. I'm telling you, I think the system is desperate at this point. They're going to do whatever needs to be done to silence, even though the cat is out of the bag. The fact that a study like this will actually get published, these people are all but saying estrogen will cause the prostate cancer and DHT will actually treat it, right? Or the very least, DHT will not cause it. There's an entire multi-billion dollar industry revolving entirely around suppressing DHT, the finasterides, the dutasterides, right? Then they also have the androgen receptor antagonists such as flutamide and bicalutamide and other even more potent and poisonous ones. And just in general, the idea, if you look at the blogosphere and just the general attitude of most doctors, is that if you're a male over 30, You really don't want like your androgens to be like too high. It's better to err on the side of caution, which means it's better to be hypogonadal. And the fact that, you know, this causes heart disease and dementias and Alzheimer's and whatnot, it's okay. It's probably your genes. It's not these like, I don't know, castrating therapies and foods that we administer.
I mean, if kids today are like, I know 5 years ago didn't have a chance, you know, think of the kids today, like with the vaccines and stuff there. I mean, they just never, their parents are probably taking drugs like SSRIs and
everybody's taking drugs. The people that are around us, and they're so open about it because it's no longer a stigma.
Yeah.
Used to be like, if you take an antidepressant, actually any drug chronically used to be like a kind of a stigma because it's like something's wrong with you, right? Especially if it's at a younger age. Now, like if you claim you're not taking anything, they'll probably think you're either lying or, you know, you're on some other kinds of drugs that you don't want to talk about.
Yeah. It's scary time. What was David E. Martin's estimate was that 800,000 people would be dead by 2028 and that even more than that would be horrifically ill.
I think we're getting to the point where basically CDC is starting to sound the alarm on some of the vaccines. I think we're going to start to see somebody, you know, some scapegoats being rounded up. I think Biden is one of them. Well, that may very well be it. Like with, you know, with the documents and everything. They'll say, okay, Biden is the one who pushed for the vaccine and the restrictions and whatnot. We'll get rid of him. It may not be because of the vaccine, but you wanted his head, and here it is on a silver platter.
If that happens, I've talked about this with multiple people, but I think the reason we're seeing all this like stuff come to the surface is because Operation MK mRNA vaccine is over. Like it's already been accomplished. Mission complete. And so the fact that we're hearing all this bad stuff about him, it completely doesn't matter. Like,
even if they round up Fauci and like 10 other people and shoot them, like it's already done. You know, they already injected sufficient. The people, that 2/3 of the population is injected.
Or give them a slap on the wrist and nothing happens to them.
Like, no, I'm saying like just to placate them and allow, basically if the sheep says, oh my God, you killed me, I'm going to die a slow, torturous death, I want Fauci dead before me. No problem. Okay. He goes, but you go too.
We'll see what happens. I always think, I think I've mentioned this multiple times, but the SPARS, scenario where they say that a vaccine was rushed and it harmed many people. And so that's like a simulation they had done where they created a vaccine that harmed a bunch of people. And so people can look that up if they want. Okay. Final words here. Anything going on in DC? Well, what's happening?
I started the show with that. I mean, there is no park in DC where you can't see at least like, you know, a few tents of homeless people.
Oh yeah.
They're roaming the streets at night. I mean, I was basically accosted by three of them just by walking on the street towards the office. Holy and shit. The office is a block away from the White House. That park, Lafayette Park, that is basically, not Lafayette, but McPherson Square, is basically, it has about 40 tents, 4-0, and is a block away from the White House. So it's like, if somebody wants to do a great expose, a contrast, like really, really, it's like the Slumdog Millionaire movie. You know, in India, you have these slums, and then like, you know, there's a wall, and there's all, you know, there's opulence and abundance and luxury. You can see it right here in DC.
What did they accost you? They just, random people just did not like the look of the Bulgarian.
No, they're out of their mind. They're all drugged up. Some of them ask for money. Others are just like looking at you with their like bugged out eyes. They don't know what they want from you, but they want to like cross your path and like, you know, get you and themselves in trouble. They don't care. There's drugged up people lying in front of the office building right now as we speak. I think around, I don't know, later at night, they come up, there's like a, there's a hostel and there's the public services that will walk around, make sure that these people don't freeze to death. But if they're drugged out, they don't take them to the hostel because in the hostel, they get violent, right? So you can't just take, they're not people who are just, you know, like drunk and then they get out of it. And then the next morning they'll basically wake up and, you know, leave and not cause any trouble. These people are so seriously drug addicted that basically when they go into abstinence, they pull out knives and start stabbing each other. Last week, two of these people, I'm pretty sure they are because they did turn out to be homeless, beat each other to death with metal pipes on the ellipse, like they call it the ellipse. There's a lawn behind the White House where the famous like protest during the Vietnam War, the movie Hair. That's where the, you know, the final scene with the protest happened. Mm-hmm. That's where they did it. And I'm thinking like, in the most heavily surveilled city in the world. Like, they, you didn't see that these people are dueling each other to death with metal pipes. I guess they did. They just didn't care. Or they didn't want to let people know that everything is being monitored. And they just allowed them to kill each other. And then they just want to pick them up.
So let's try to count all the psyops happening at one time. Defund the police, racial tension, increase in homelessness, crime due to inflation, massive
stagflation, actually. Now there's like no food, right? Like for most people.
Yeah, no food, massive immigration. What else? Looming pandemics. Possible
transgenderism, yeah, like turning not just the gender, like the genders and like everybody you can think of, like against each other, right? I was gonna say that's probably a good way to keep people distracted from whatever happens with the vaccine and the war with Ukraine. The moment I think something really bad starts to kind of like take a hold in public's cautious, such as like the vaccines really are a murder weapon, right? I think that's when we're going to see like something like a real, really big psyop that we haven't seen yet transpire. A cyber attack, right? You know, like something happens to the grid, you know, or a large scale regional war, like the Wrecked Vogue with Russia and China. One way or another, this system is done. There's no recovery. They know there's no recovery. And I think the public at this point knows there's no recovery. I maintain contact with a supplier in China. Most of the stuff we source from the United States, but there is one supplier in China. And then I was emailing her around, it wasn't on Christmas, but it was like shortly after Christmas. And then she responds back and says, Georgie, you're crazy. Like, don't you ever stop working? And I said, why? Today is actually a working day. It was like, what is it, 27? She's like, I have a lot of customers in the United States, and I can tell you, I have not been able to get a hold of anybody since the beginning of December. And based on experience, this continues until middle of January. She's like, everybody simply has checked out. They just don't care anymore. And I'm looking at the people around me and even the people that are renting offices here, right, you know, around me. It's only like four or five companies on a space of two floors. I don't know how this company is paying the bills that's actually doing the short-term rentals to me and other smaller companies. But it's basically, I think the people who could work, they checked out, they decided the system is corrupt, they're not going to support it anymore. So they're doing what they can to support their families, just the bare minimum. Just like I said before, that's where the stagflation, that's where it's coming from. When people no longer want to participate in the system, I am definitely seeing that right now. And not just in DC and not just in the United States. Same thing in Europe. In fact, in Europe, it's worse.
Speaking of checking out, do you want to, I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, but possibly leaving.
Leaving the States?
Yeah.
I'm ready. I don't have any property here. I don't have any loans. I don't have anything. I can, really pick up and go. Almost nothing will be left behind here that I need to worry about. The problem is that go where, I think they've done a very good job at like messing things up everywhere.
I know a place in Mexico.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes, yes. But only if you promise that we can, find guns there. I'm a very pro Second Amendment person.
What is Bulgaria? Do they have guns there?
Oh, Bulgaria has more guns per capita than the United States.
Really?
Yeah, illegal though. Like they're off the books, but it's there. Like it's the spirit of since the Ottoman Empire. Basically, they're being guerrilla fighters. Bulgarians are basically guerrilla masters of sabotaging the system and guerrilla fighters, which of course means during peaceful times, nothing really gets done because even then they don't trust the system and try to do their best to like sub-sabotage it.
Shout out to somebody I'm talking to named Kamen, who is from Bulgaria. And he told me to ask you about cheese, yellow cheese.
Yellow cheese. Oh, kashkaval?
Yes. I think that was it.
That's what we call it. Yes, yes. So in Bulgaria, cheese, we only call the feta cheese. Huh. The yellow stuff, which I think in the States will be called provolone, probably is the closest to taste. We call it kashkaval. Yeah. And then very similar, you go to Greece, they have something called saganaki, and it's basically like sautéed yellow cheese. Really good, really yummy. Like you just do a little breading and toss it in like in butter for a little bit. It's awesome. Goes very well with beer.
Speaking of Bulgarians, did you reach, there's a person on Twitter named Landsharks, and he wrote a really, it was one of the most well-written things obituary for Ray, or it was like poetic and amazing. And I couldn't Common actually told me, he's like, and yeah, and it's his second language. And I was like, man, this dude speaks English better than I do. It was, you know what I'm talking about? He's on Twitter. He's like he's a Ray fan.
Can you send me that? I mean, like, I haven't seen it. I don't check Twitter very often because people start harassing there for like advice.
My New Year's resolution is to not go on Twitter. So don't try to contact me on there.
Nope. Have I ever? I tag you once in a while, but that's about it.
Not you, just people in general, because okay. I won't see it. Okay. Hey, Georgie, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. I'm glad we got to do this first show of the year, basically. So we'll be back. We have plenty of articles we did not talk about, so I'm excited to link up again, and we'll connect.
Well, there'll be a lot more. Yep. A lot more. Some very good ones, especially on serotonin endotoxin, just came up in my mailbox.
Awesome. IdealabsDC.com. And you heard it here first. Or they're gonna be,
and look out for the talk of it in olive oil coming out this week. Okay. Announcement coming up this week.
I think we have 100 people watching, which is pretty similar to YouTube. So, guys, thank you guys so much. I know it's people kind of freak out when you say you're going to a different platform, but we literally have to do this because I can't get my YouTube channel.
I think my prediction for 2023 is get ready to be adaptive with platforms because they will probably have more than a few get shut down or at least mysteriously go down due to a cyber attack.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Everybody, have a great weekend. Georgie, thank you so much. Really appreciate you. Thanks everybody watching this on Substack and Telegram, etc. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Peace out.